Many thanks to Topo Athletic for its continued support of Another Mother Runner. Topo shoes are designed to help you move naturally with a roomy toe box, secure midfoot, and low heel-to-toe drop to encourage a midfoot strike. Save 15% on any full-price purchase at topoathletic.com with code TOPOAMR2024. Thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting our show. When you search for something on Netflix, the results you get are only a fraction of what Netflix actually has. You're missing out on so many great shows, unless you use ExpressVPN. Go to expressvpn.com/AMR and get an extra 3 months free. Thanks to Tifosi Optics, maker of my favorite sunglasses. Tifosi has the tagline, "Where sport meets life," which is so true. I wear Tifosi sunglasses running, playing pickleball, cycling, driving, and walking the dog. Get 20% off with code AMR20 at TifosiOptics.com.
Welcome to Many Happy Miles, a podcast that celebrates all types of forward movement, whether it's a short run walk on a spring day or 26.2 miles in Boston on an unusually warm day. We're here to say yay to all of it. I'm Dimity McDowell, co-founder of Another Mother Runner. And this week, my co-host, Sarah Wassner Flynn, is morphing into a guest. She'll be on a little bit later because this episode is devoted to the Boston Marathon and Sarah just finished it for her first time. Although I've never seen or run the Boston Marathon in real life, I feel like I have. I feel like I've been shuttled to the start. I feel like I've looked for the clock tower in Ashland. I feel like I've felt the energy near the train station in Framingham. I feel like I've flown through the Scream Tunnel at Wellesley. It would have probably been my favorite part of the marathon. I feel like I've climbed Heartbreak Hill and turned left on Boylston Street to grab that medal adorned with the iconic uniform. A unicorn. I just listed those landmarks off the top of my head because that's how iconic the Boston Marathon is. It is stamped in so many of our runners' brains. And as such, it's a brass ring many runners reach for at some point during their career. And today, I'm going to talk to three women who just ran the 2024 running of the Boston Marathon. And they all started with different perspectives. Brianna Bamer started in the elite wave for the first time at age 45. Sarah Wassner Flynn started as a qualifier, running her first Boston. And Karen Ryan, who finished her 10th running of the Boston Marathon this year, entered this year as a charity runner for the first time. So they all have some very different perspectives to bring to this race. And it's going to be an interesting, exciting episode. So first off, I'm going to talk with Brianna Bamer, or Brie as I call her, and I hope she still likes to go by. Brie lives near Boulder with her husband, Michael. She has one dog and two cats who are very cute. You may remember Brie from my Ironman days. She coached me beautifully through Ironman Coeur d'Alene in 2013, but this is not about me. This is about her. So just in case you're like, I think I remember her. In 2021, at the age of 42, Brie raced her first open marathon at CIM, California International Marathon, and set a master's course record of 2 hours and 33 minutes. She was subsequently invited to join the Underbird program at Wazelle. It was a team of Olympic hopefuls that Wazelle described as resilient, resourceful women who are rooted in their running goals and self-belief. They persisted despite being overlooked and underappreciated by the running industry. So, Brie, that's a perfect description for you. I am so excited to have you on. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dimity. It's so wonderful. Awesome. Yeah, I even like thinking back to the Ironman, it's like some of my happiest memories. So yeah, oh my gosh. Sometimes you go back to pictures and things and like some of my favorites giving you a hug at the finish line and just like following you all day. Yeah. Oh,
it was a good time. I mean, that was a good,
those are memories.
Those are memories. And they pop up again and again, which
they
I'm just
do.
Like, that was 10 years ago. Oh my gosh.
I know. So can you believe it? Time.
No, I cannot. Here. I cannot. But like I said, this is not about me. Long shot. So I know you had a long and windy path, but tell us about your road to the 2024 Boston Marathon, Brie.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, to be honest, I never, if you were to ask me 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, if I would be running the Boston Marathon at all, not even the elite field, I would tell you no. So you know, the idea of racing marathons. I had done Ironmans, but like racing an open marathon just wasn't something that was in my purview. And so when the pandemic hit and the pools closed and I couldn't do the normal triathlon stuff. And admittedly, I never really enjoyed swimming, sort of liked biking, but I always have loved running. Running's been my background. I just started running again for the love and joy of running. And it brought me to, hey, why don't I just run a marathon, not race a marathon, just run a marathon. And that's when I decided to sign up for CIM, and it just completely blew me away what I was able to do by just doing something that I enjoyed so much. You know, and I you and I both have commiserated over injuries and setbacks and things. And my time as an athlete, you know, I was a runner first and then became a triathlete, but my time in both arenas has definitely had its injuries. And I've learned as I've gotten older that the idea of having these perfect kind of scenarios and perfect lead ups and perfect everything, it doesn't exist. And the story is actually going to be oftentimes, you know, those pretty pictures you see on TV and the stories you read on social media, behind the scenes, there's all of the things, right? And so for me, sure. Like I've started to embrace the fact that, you know, these things are going to happen and I'm going to keep trying to figure out the ways to not have it happen, but life is just going to be that way. And so I think that's what then made my first marathon experience so special, was I was able to love what I was doing, get through obstacles, and have an amazing day that I know will not always happen, but have that amazing day that opened up doors to be able to next be, like you said, invited into the Underbird program, which completely is, when I read the application, I was like, that sounds like me to a T. you know, like I just, you know, like my entire life I've been like, wait, I could do that, but, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having that opportunity and then being able to be invited into the elite field of the Boston Marathon, these are all things that I had dreamed of 20 years ago, yeah, truly, and was reaching now when I wouldn't have even imagined. So it was, to me, just such a big lesson of, you know, things are just, the idea of the perfect timeline stories, you know, if we can let go of those things and understand that there's going to be a lot that goes into it. And there's, as cliche as it sounds, it is actually kind of how it makes it as special as it is, right? You know, yeah. I can't imagine now running Boston 20 years ago, like running it now. I mean, I can't even tell you, and I know we'll talk more, but like when I was on the starting line, I had tears in my eyes. Like I had sunglasses on, but behind them, I was like tearing up because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm experiencing something that I just never thought I'd experience, you know? So,
yeah. Well, so for those of us who don't run, you know, 233 marathons, yeah. And did you just get like an invitation in the mail to, or an email, or how did you get invited to the Boston Marathon?
Well, so no, like I'm not that cool. I wish. I wish. You know, it's funny because I was actually thinking during the whole, you know, like there's a special bus you get on. They have all these things for the elite athletes that I was experiencing for the first time. And I know all these elites, like it's just like par for the course for them because they've been doing it for, it's just what's normal. So for a lot of those elites, yes, they get invited. I actually just knew that my time qualified me to be in the elite field. So I emailed the race director and I said, hi, okay, like I would love to be one of the people that you invite, you know, to the race. I know you have a limited number. I'm a master's athlete. And I know they had tried to fill out a good field of a master's elites. And so emailed the race director. And then you just hope that they say, yes, I want to invite you. Cause I've just like, this is why it's so special. Like the Boston, Mary Kate is amazing. And she is such a huge proponent and supporter of women and the things we're trying to achieve. And, you know, when I wrote her, she was like, Brianna, it'd be an honor. We'd love to have you in the field. You know, the next year I wanted to run the Berlin Marathon. That race director was like, nope, like just, you know, like straight up no. And even though there were people in the field that I had run faster than, you know, so it's like there's no guarantee even for me running a time that I thought would be more than worthy. Yeah. You still have to kind of go through those hoops. And so, yeah, it's just like for me, just sending an email and just hoping that they're like, yes, we'd love that.
Yeah.
I'm not an Emma Bates who probably gets emails from race directors that say like, can you please come? We'd love to have you.
No worries. Well, so you kind of mentioned some things, but talk about like the coolest pre-race part. Like, you know, what happened once you got there? Just because, again, none of us are really ever, or very few real listeners, I think, will ever experience that.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Oh my gosh. It was crazy. So you know, they have like the elite, like pre-elite meetings and stuff like that, you know, which are kind of just surreal because you're in a room with people that you've idolized and looked up to. You know, I'm sitting mm-hmm. in a room and there's Des Linden sitting over there and, you know, just it's just really cool. But then
did you play it cool or did you like, can I get your picture?
it's funny. Like there's a part of me that wasn't, I'm like, no, she's a normal person. It's all good. Yeah. So, but the race morning, they treat you just like royalty. You know, they have a special bus for you that you get in and then you get to Hopkinton and they have a tent just for us. That's all heated and has flooring. My husband told me that the everyday person does not get flooring. They just have grass.
Yes, this is true.
Yes. Yeah, so I
get heat, I think too. I don't think they get heat.
Either, I don't think do they do either. Yeah. We have this beautiful heated tent flooring. And then I kid you not, seats for every athlete with a stretching mat in front of the seat. And then,
wow.
I know, I was like, wow. Your own porta potties, a spread of food that you want, probably thousands of dollars of Morton's gels sitting there, which I partially was like, should I take a few to just pocket? But yeah, it's just like truly anything you need. And so, yeah, it was this kind of surreal feeling of just like you were completely worry-free, which as you know, any race that you normally do, there's just so many logistics. Like, what am I going to do with my stuff? Like all these things, they take care of it. Like you hand them your stuff, they take care of it. You need anything, they take care of it. It's just like this full court press for you. So it was just this surreal kind of thing. And then I also get bottles on the course. So the day before you drop off the bottles that you want and you tell them which mile marker you want the bottle at and they're going to take care of it. And it's going to be out there for you. You don't even have to worry. It truly is a magical thing that I know that's so fun. Such a privilege. Yeah. It was such an honor and privilege to be a part of.
I have. Okay. So what goals did you set for yourself during your training cycle for this race when you were heading into Boston?
You know, I mean, we all have like the little like, oh, wouldn't it be cool? I definitely had at first I was thinking like, oh, it'd be cool to be like one of the fastest masters. Obviously if you looked at the results, like, there's like some amazing athletes, in particular, Edna Kiplagat, who was third, is 44. I mean, and she got third. Yeah. Obviously being the fastest master wasn't going to be in the cards. Sarah Hall just became a master. But I was thinking like, if I could be one of the top, you know, four or five masters, that would be really cool. But otherwise, honestly, I was just so excited to experience Boston that I just wanted to get to the line ready to just give my best to the course and whatever happened. It just didn't really matter. I just really wanted to be able to get to the line as fit as I could be to just tackle it. And that was my goal, really. Yeah. And then just soak it up, just soak up all of what you just talked about, all those iconic things that I had heard about. I just could not wait to experience all the little bits and pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so you talked a little bit, but just put us on race morning, Monday morning. You get to start, you know, I think you guys start after the wheelchairs, right?
Yes.
I mean, so you're not waiting around for hours on that heated tent with that lovely floor.
Yeah.
And you said you were tearing up a little bit. I mean, what did that feel like? Were you just, I mean, you sent a screenshot of you being on television, which we're going to send out on Tuesday when we post this episode. But talk about just what it felt like. Did you have goosebumps? You had tears?
Gosh. Yeah, like goosebumps and tears. And like, you know, Joan Benoit Samuelson is like the starter and she's up there and people are cheering for you. And just like, just this surreal feeling that, because, you know, I think any of us who are just big fans of the sport, like I've watched this on TV for years. Like I've watched this and I got to stand and be in it, like in the middle of it. And it was the coolest thing. I was like, I could just die right now. And this would be, you know, like plenty, like just, I could just run the first mile and I'd be a happy clam. Like, because I just got to experience walking up to the line, you know, being part of this field with these amazing females. I mean, women that are setting new records and just showing us what's possible. And there are other masters athletes. You just felt like this, like kind of camaraderie also there.
I was going to ask you, like And I mean, I know that this is their, it's the event, right?
Right.
They're not like back of the pack, like yucking it up, like, you know, but what was the energy like between competitors? I mean, is it very much game face or was there some, I mean, positive energy? I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
Spreading, like, talk a little bit about how much interaction you had with your competitors.
That's a really good question. Like the top ones you could tell were very, it's so interesting being one of the people who's not like this 220 marathoner, you know, like they were very intense, you could see. And there's just a lot of like, I'm watching them and just being like, oh my gosh, I'm glad I'm not you right now. Like in a way,
yeah.
You know, cause just like, oh my gosh.
They've got a big paycheck on the line.
Yeah. But a lot of the rest of us, because if you really think like you've got this like tip top of these women that are 222 or faster, but then you have a lot of us who are in the 230s. And yeah, just it was really cool. Like one of the women at the start line came up to me. She's like, are you Bree? Like, I'm also a master's runner. Like, have a great race. Like, just super friendly. Her name was Gina. And, you know, like the girl I was sitting next to in the tent was, you know, super nice. And couple times, you know, when I was going to the porta potties, like it was just this kind of sense of we're all here to have a good day and help each other out there. So I think a lot of the women who are like in my kind of realm, like we're just really grateful that we have this experience. And I didn't feel any sort of tension or intensity, but I could see some of the other athletes that were like contending for the win that it was a little probably different for them, just game face. And
So spoiler alert, your race did not see Boylston Street, which I am very sorry about. That's so hard. So when do you know that your race wasn't going to end as you'd hoped?
So I had the weirdest luck of just about a week out from the race, my Achilles tendon, which has always been my Achilles heel, kind of flared up, and I got a lot of scar tissue that inflamed, and I was trying my best to partially ignore it, but also like just do all the things I could. And so on race day, I was just really hoping it was going to hold up. And I mean, truthfully, every mile just, it got more and more painful and I could feel myself compensating more and more. And I was trying to avoid like little potholes and things like that. And I probably ran a few more miles than I should have, because I feel like probably at mile 6, I should have even just called it. But I went until almost like mile 11. And then I was like, okay, this is, I'm really starting to do damage. It's like sharp, sharp, sharp pains. And I don't want to like all of a sudden hear a pop or something, you know, like that would be the worst. You and I both have experienced where I don't want to be out for a year. You know, I would rather stop now and be out for a month and be able to get back to running. At the end of the day, I truly love to run. And if it's not in a race, that's okay. I just don't want to be another year without running. So I recognized
such a hard decision. I mean, I'm sure the pain probably helped you realize it. But when I hear that, I put myself in that position. And I think anybody who's been injured, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, I have the energy and the momentum and I'm freaking running the Boston Marathon and I'm going to pull myself out.
Like,
I mean, I it brings tears to my eyes just thinking about the mental gymnastics you must have been doing. I mean, was it just like, I mean, you obviously knew it was the right thing to do. Was it hard to say I'm done?
It really, I mean, like I said, at mile 6, my brain was like, you need to stop. And I went to mile 11. Like, cause I was like, well, let's just do one more mile. Like, it's going to be okay. You know, like your brain just, I'm like, you're at Boston. Like, who cares if you rip it? I'm like, no, Brianna, you don't want to, like, your brain is just constantly, like, literally, truly from mile 6 on, like, it was just constant in my brain going back and forth of like, okay, this is Boston. Like, just, I want to, like, maybe you could just walk the whole thing, Brianna, like just so you can get to Boylston Street. And I'm like, well, that's stupid, you know? And just my brain trying to rationalize that. I think that the one thing I've learned over time is it's a wonderful experience and that race is iconic, but it is at the end of the day, just one day, one race that there's no reason I can't come back. There's no reason why I can't try to experience it again. One of the things I did tell myself is you've already experienced something so wonderful up to this point. And it wasn't just on race day leading up to it, being a part of some panels and getting to talk with other women and just being in Boston was already such a gift that I think one of the things I rationalized in the last, when I finally was like, I need to stop, was don't overlook the gift you've already been given and don't be greedy with this gift just so that you can have something that everyone says you should have when really you already got everything that was more than enough, you know? And so But yeah, I, gosh, like, cause I've done races before where I've been super stubborn and continued to the point where I tore something or ripped something. And then if I looked back on it, I was like, you know, was it really worth that finish line? Like, now you can't do anything for months and months and months and months. And now you're really yeah. sad and truthfully a little depressed because you can't run.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I get it. I get it. Well, so you made the wise choice. We're very, very proud of you. I know all the listeners are being like, I know it's hard, but I'm very proud she did it. So you're healing now. Do you have other races, like other open marathons on your calendar, or what's up next for you and your master's amazingness?
Oh, thanks. See, this actually ties into the beginning. I really would love to run New York, and I reached out to the elite director there, and I'm not sure if he's going to let me in. We'll see. But I like was like, I do this with every, you know, opportunity. I'm like, I don't need anything special. I just really want to run. Like, if you'll let me. And so like I applied, I was like, he said he was still not sure, like he was too busy to think about his leap field at the time that I reached out. Like I reached out very much in advance. I think I reached out in like January or something. Cause I'm like, okay. like trying to plan my year. I'm like, okay, I really would love to run your race. Can I just get on your list? Like, and so he's like, oh, I'm not even thinking about that right now. And just out of worry of like, well, I would really like to run New York. I just tried to apply as a normal, I shouldn't say, but you know, just like in a normal entry, like
a citizen marathon,
citizen marathon entry. And because I hadn't run a marathon in the last year, I didn't have a time to put in, and they required a marathon time within a year of the entry. So I couldn't even get in as a normal, as a citizen. So yeah, like I'm hoping that he will allow me to run in the elite field, cause I would love to run the New York City Marathon. If not, then I will find a different event, but I'm still holding out hope. I don't want to bug him a ton, but I will try again just to be like, hi, I just wanted to remind you that I still would really love to run. And, you know, I like trying to be confident of myself. Like I'm confident I would still be one of their, you know, top elite master runners. Obviously not like their 220 like stars or anything, but hopefully would be a good addition to the field. But you just never know what they're trying to put together. And it's a weird, something I've never experienced, but it is a very weird realm trying to be a part of these fields and try to get yourself to, that's where the Underbird program in a way, like get yourself to feel validated that it is, you deserve, you belong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one gift that I was a little unexpected at Boston, like Mary Kate, she's amazing. And she even said at the elite meeting and then even the morning of the race, she's like, you earn, every single one of you earned your spot here. And every one of you has the chance to win this race. Don't doubt your, you know, your worthiness of being at this event. And I felt that was so powerful. And I don't think that is a normal narrative. And it was just wonderful to be like, in my brain, I'm like, you know what? Yes, I earned my spot here. I worked really hard to get here. And even if I only make it 2 miles, I earned the right to stand on this line. And I think we need to tell and learn these lessons more and more, that even if it's not the perfect outcome or story, that our hard work is valid and worthy.
Agreed.
So yeah, hopefully I'll get to run New York. We'll see.
Well, dang it. Like, can we mount a campaign or something on X? Like,
I don't need anything special. I just really want to start on, I just want to run the course.
we need a female race director. I'm just saying, I gotta say, I feel like females are a little bit more, you know, sensitive to that.
They are.
That narrative, you know? So,
I mean, Mary Kate, she's amazing. Like, that's what, I mean, seriously, kudos to her. Everyone should be, I mean, she's just a phenomenal supporter of the women in that field and just so kind. I what a gift that she's a part of the Boston committee and
family. Well, we are super proud of you, Bree. I am always, you know, you know, you have a special place in my heart, and I always love to see your posts, and we are rooting for you. And if you do get to run New York, I would love to hear, have you back, hear how it goes.
Yay. Yes. I would love that too. I would love it. Hopefully let's fingers crossed.
Make a plan.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Boston Tales.
Save 15% on any full price purchase at topoathletic.com with code TOPOAMR2024. For nearly two decades, I was the athletic footwear editor for Shape magazine, which meant I wear tested hundreds of running shoes. So trust me when I tell you, Topo Athletic running shoes are exceptionally great. Ever since I started running in Topos several years ago, I've left all the other brands in the dust. Founded by longtime leaders in the footwear industry, Topo Athletic makes shoes with a roomy toe box, secure midfoot and heel, and low heel-to-toe drop. Topo creates products that embrace the body's natural biomechanics and avoid gimmicky design features. Put another way, Topo shoes let your foot do what it naturally wants to do as you run or hike. I alternate between the Phantom 3 and the Atmos. The Atmos is a max cushion shoe, meaning it provides more cushioning than a traditional running shoe. Before my first Atmos run, I worried it might feel a little like running on marshmallows, but not at all. They provide a lively, responsive feel while dampening the shock on my knees, hips, and my back. Running in the Atmos feels fun, and my joints and back are happy during and after my run. And like all Topo Athletic shoes, the roomy forefoot gives my toes room to spread naturally while my midfoot and heel are cradled securely and comfortably. Like many Topo Athletic shoes, the Atmos is available in regular and wide sizes, in women's sizes 6 to 12. Find your favorite Topo with a special code just for you. Save 15% on any full price purchase at topoathletic.com with code TOPOAMR2024. Again, use code TOPOAMR2024 to save 15% on any full price shoes at TOPOATHLETIC.com. That code TOPOAMR2024 at topoathletic.com. Check this out. I just heard something mind-blowing. When you search for something on Netflix, the results you get are only a fraction of what Netflix actually has. Netflix actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the US. You're missing out on literally thousands of great shows, unless you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. Clever, right? They have more than 100 different locations, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows no matter where you live. This works with many other streaming services too. Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, BBC iPlayer, which is a free option normally only available in the UK, and now one of my top go-to streaming services. I'm a sucker for British telly, so being able to tap into BBC iPlayer offerings has been a game changer. I find British comedies far more funny than US ones, and British thrillers and mysteries are delightfully clever. It's so simple to use ExpressVPN. Just open the app on my Mac, select the UK, tap one button to connect, and I feel like I've landed in London. ExpressVPN is super fast. I can stream everything in HD with no buffering. And added bonus, ExpressVPN encrypts all your data, keeping you safe from hackers. So stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give our listeners 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/AMR. That's expressvpn.com/AMR to get 3 extra months completely free. expressvpn.com/AMR. Get 20% off any Tifosi Optics sunglasses with code AMR20 at tifosioptics.com. Just like with reading glasses, I like to have a pair of sunglasses close at hand no matter where I am. In the drawer with my GPS watch and headphones, in my pickleball bag, in the car, and in my carry-on bag. And they are all Tifosi Optics sunglasses. They're incredibly durable, comfortable, cute, and priced, so you can always have multiple pairs at the ready. Tifosi's shatterproof polycarbonate lenses are scratch-resistant and they reduce glare. And I really appreciate that the Tifosi glasses with fun-colored lenses, like Smoke Rose Mirror and Smoke Bright Blue, let me see the world the way it actually looks without distorting it like some similarly priced shades do. As I mentioned, Tifosi glasses are super high quality. Tifosi Glide technology allows the frame to slide on comfortably and provide an anti-bounce fit. Hydrophilic rubber nosebands provide more grip the more you sweat, so the glasses stay secure during even your most intense activities. On a recent 6-mile run, my Tifosi Swanks, one of Tifosi's most popular models, stayed in place perfectly, and they were comfortable the entire way. See for yourself. Get 20% off Tifosi sunglasses with code AMR20 at tifosioptics.com. Again, get 20% off Tifosi sunglasses using code AMR20 at TIFOSIOptics.com. That code AMR20, that website, TIFOSIOptics.com.
Okay.
Okay, next up, we have Sarah Wassner Flynn, who you all know. She's my co-host and a mother of four who lives in Maryland, who ran her first Boston Marathon this year after qualifying at the 2022 Twin Cities Marathon. So Sarah, remind listeners, I kind of just gave it away, but remind listeners of your road to the 2024 Boston Marathon.
Okay, so it's a long and winding road. although I am a lifelong runner, I wrote about this last year. I put the marathon high on a shelf a long, long time ago. When I was 20-something, I ran my first marathon. I didn't have a good experience, and I decided never again. I don't want to do it again. Lo and behold, many, many years later, I get this wonderful opportunity to work with you, Dimity, and another mother runner. I was inspired by everybody in the community to try another marathon. I had been doing 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, triathlons, but I never did a marathon. So 22 years later, I did Twin Cities, as you mentioned. I had a wonderful, epic day. I qualified for Boston, and it was October of 2022, so I just missed the window for Boston 2023. So I had to wait another year, which was this year, to actually run Boston. In that time, I went and did Marine Corps Marathon this past October, and I actually qualified for Boston 2025 there, which was fun. And so here I am. So I qualified in Twin Cities, and then I hopefully will run it again next year based on my qualifying time from Marine Corps. And in Boston too, I qualified again. So yeah,
you're just left and right. They're coming in like waves. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we know from you talking on this podcast, you are the coach at a very a national caliber high school mm-hmm. track team. You have your writing business. I mean, you've got a lot going on. So tell us about your training cycle for this. Like, did you have a goal going into Boston, or what was your
You know, I always wanted to just enjoy Boston. The first time I did it, I think even when I qualified, I said, well, when I get there, I'm just going to go and do it and enjoy it. So I'll get into that. I thought that I would enjoy it a little bit more.
What that looks like.
But as far as training goes, as you mentioned, with my track schedule, that was also new this year. I just started with this school. I've been coaching for about 6 years, but I started with this program, Bullis School, in September. And so that's like a few months later, I was starting my Boston build, and it's very intense. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Our team is amazing, but to get kids to be that good, it's very intense. We're on the road a lot traveling. I think I've traveled 15 or 16 out of 20 weeks since our season started. Wow. And so, you know, doing a lot of my long runs in different parts of the East Coast. I had about 9 long runs in different states, I think, in the end. And so, or like some multiple states, I think I ran in New Jersey twice or something, but it was a little bit different, and I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed the training process, but I didn't put any parameters on myself as far as time goes, because I knew that extra stress would impact my coaching, my ability to be a good coach, my ability to be a good mom. In this season of life that I have so many different buckets that I'm trying to fill, I just thought the marathon bucket could be like the last kind of the lowest priority. And that's kind of where it fell. But I still, you know, respect the distance so much that I wanted to do the training. So I did check off the boxes of my training schedule, just say like time-wise, pace-wise, I wasn't really ambitious, put it that way.
Sure. Okay, so fast forward to Boston, you get there and you go to the expo. Did that live up to your expectations as your first time being there?
Oh my gosh, yes. I think in my older age, I'm learning that I don't really like crowds. So the influx of humans, like in the area, it was a little much for me. But we had Maeve. It was just my husband and Maeve and I. We the other three kids stayed at home with my parents. And she's Maeve four. Yeah. Right? And we actually had her in the stroller just so she wasn't going to be running around. So that was a little bit of a challenge because there's some escalators. So we kind of actually got like a backdoor entrance because of the stroller. So we skipped one of the lines. There was many, many like different corrals and winding little pathways that they had us take before we got to the expo. It was crowded, yes, but also like the vibe was just electrifying, and, you know, just being part of that as a runner was thrilling. I was definitely like a moth to a flame when it came to the gear and the merch. I was like, I'm not going to buy.
Did you buy the jacket? Did you buy the jacket? We got to know.
I sent Dimity and Kathy and April, our Train Like a Mother team, a picture. And I was like, do I drop the $120 on this jacket? And you were all very enthusiastically, responded with a yes. And so I don't spend $120 on just anything, but I think the Boston Marathon jacket was worth the money. I actually got, I feel like I'm a little kid, but my parents had given me a $100 bill for Christmas and I tucked it away in my wallet and I happened to have it on me. And I was like, okay, so my parents are buying this jacket for me. And they had like a cash only lane that was really short. And I was like, okay, it's a sign. I never have cash on me. I happen to have $120 and there was no tax. So it was just $120. And
karma, just $120. Yeah, no, it's, I, you got to buy the jacket. I mean, come on. Like that is, I don't know that you need to buy the jacket every year, but your first year, I believe that's a rite of passage.
Yes. And believe it or not, one note on the jacket quickly. People were complaining about it because it wasn't embroidered. It was like screen printed. I was like, I don't care. I don't care about like the comparing it to years past. This is the only year so far that I've been here. So I'm going to buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to do it. You got to do it. That's awesome. Okay. Well, so you get to race day. Like how was waiting? Like what time did you get up at the start? And what time was your wave going off?
My wave was at 10:50, which was a little bit of like a what WTF moment for me because you know all of my runs have been starting really early. So the 10:50 thing kind of threw me for a loop, but I did find out that about 2 weeks ago. So I was prepared. As far as getting up, I got up. I didn't really sleep well the night. A typical race nerves, you know, my stomach was a little off and that kind of plagued me throughout the day. I kind of felt a little queasy all day, chalked it up to nerves, but also kind of it impacted my sleep a little. So I got up very calm, you know, just had to stay quiet because I was in the room with Maeve and Mark and then got my breakfast. I left for the buses at around 7:45. I arrived at around 8:10. And then there's this swarm of people just heading to these school buses. I just followed the crowd like a sheep. And I didn't meet up with anybody. I was planning to maybe meet up with some local runners, but I ended up just going on my own timetable. But as soon as I got on the bus, the woman next to me, her name is Nancy. She's 62. She's from Montreal. She had a beautiful French accent. She had done 18 marathons. This was her third Boston. And she was just such a calming presence. And we just chatted the whole way. It's a long drive to Hopkinton. It took about an hour. I know. Yeah. We just talked. She ate her peanut butter sandwich. I ate my, I can't remember. I had a cereal bar. And we just had a really pleasant time. Everybody was really chatty and the vibe was really, you know, excited. It wasn't like silence. Everybody was talking. It was so fun.
Yeah.
And then once you get to the athletes' village, you can peel off one way or the other. I went to the parking lot. There were a lot of tents on the other side, but I saw more porta potties in my view. And so I went there. I met a few more friends, a man named Jimmy, who we had like very almost matching marathon PRs and we were in the same wave, same corral. So we kind of hung out and walked to the start together. And it was just very surreal, definitely surreal. The first time vibes were like, oh my gosh, like I just couldn't believe that I was there and doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about your race. I mean, how was your pacing? How was your goal to soak it up? I know it was it was a hot day, wasn't it?
Yeah, surprisingly, it was very warm. I think what the temperature itself wasn't that hot, but Boston doesn't have much shade and the sun, there were no clouds. It was a beautiful day to be a spectator and to be out there. That's why the crowds were amazing. The weather was perfect. For a runner, not so much because of the sun was really beating down on us. And I don't do well in heat. And I hate saying that because I don't want to have a crutch or anything. But like, I know I've done races in warm weather that something happens and I just don't, it's not ideal conditions for me.
It's your kryptonite. Yeah. You and Adrienne Martini, she used to call it, I mean, the bowl of the sun. And like, it's hard. And even especially when, I mean, I realize, you know, that our planet is getting warmer, but like we're coming off of a season of you know, spring, right? So some days are like today, it's 30 degrees in Denver, but this weekend it was 80, right? So, you know, you're not used to running in those
right.
warm temperatures.
Yeah. And I guess not for that long either. So because we've had a couple of warm days, but those weren't the days that I did my long runs. So going into it, I was very confident in my pacing. All my long runs were at a certain pace, I would say between like, I think my fastest, I did a 19 miler at like 8:03, and then maybe my slowest was 8:23 or something, 8:25. So I was like comfortable in those, that pacing. So I thought if I hit 8:15s, I'd be perfect, but that's not what happened. So I'm still kind of like wrapping my head around it. I think because I didn't go into it with this like strict race plan, I let it kind of fall apart a little bit too soon. And I just said, okay, this isn't going to be a day where you're paying attention to your watch. You're just going to, you know, walk when you want to walk and enjoy it. And that's that. And I kind of went to that side. And now, you know, hindsight being 2020, I kind of wish that I pursued it a little bit better so that I didn't walk. I walked through most of the water stations, but I also like really, really enjoyed. I love the crowds. I just kind of went through it as more of a participant versus a competitor.
Sure.
And so I don't know why I have a little bit of regret about that, but you know what? There's always another marathon. There's always another Boston, hopefully for me. And I made that decision and I can't go back and change that. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I hear you because that's happened to me. I totally remember, especially when I had younger kids, being like, looking at my time and being like, why didn't I push harder? Like what, you know, not at the Boston Marathon, obviously, but in places, I mean, I definitely remember a 10 miler in the Garden of the Gods in Colorado Springs. And I was like, I came home and I was just angry at myself. And I was like, okay, Dimity, like, what are you going to do about it now? And I'm not giving you therapy or counseling or anything, but I'm just saying like, you made those choices. And, you know, from my end, I'm like, you still what? You ran like a 3:44
or
something?
Yeah, it was
what
3:44:47. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then you still have such, and again, like it's all perspective, right? You get to have your story. I'm not saying like, don't be disappointed in yourself, Sarah. But, you know, from my side and probably what people see from the outside is like, oh my gosh, she went and she executed what she wanted to on a hot day. She soaked it up. She took care of herself. Maybe it wasn't as speedy as she wanted it to be, but at the end of the day, like nobody, I mean, I always say this, like nobody cares about your finishing time, you know? And I don't say that as like a tisk, like get over yourself, Sarah, but more like, you know what it's, but I get it. I get it that you can be disappointed. So thank you for sharing that because I think a lot of people, I think we all feel that way regardless of sometimes what our splits are, you know, because you know that you're capable of more, you've done it, but that wasn't your day.
And
you know,
the marathon is so humbling and it just, there's a reason that people do so many because you are constantly trying to figure this puzzle out. And I really lucked out with my first one being so good. And I think I just like took for granted that the marathon is just, it's hard and it's, you know, it's tough to figure out. And I did a lot of things right. And I did a lot of things that I'm really proud of. And I finished so happy. And I just want to remember that because, you know, we are our own worst critic. And I don't want it, you know, and I know from like an outside perspective, like I did a Boston Marathon and I have to be proud of that. And I had so much support and so many people were lifting me up. And I just want to say thank you to everybody. And I don't want to like harp on anything negative, like a finishing time, because it's like, whatever, I finished. And that was really my end goal. Do I wish I was faster? Do I wish I could have gone easier and made the time faster? Yes, but that's not what happened. I have one funny story.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, what was a highlight of the course?
Okay. Let me tell you, not a highlight at first, because it's kind of funny. Okay. I had to take a bathroom break. I was like really overhydrated. I don't know. I had to pee. And so I went to the bathroom and, I looked down and I literally stepped in somebody else's poop. Somebody did not make, and I was like, there you go, Sarah. That's a metaphor for your race. You really stepped in it now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So gross. That was gross, but I recovered. I wiped my foot off. I mean, that's what I was doing during those like 9 minute and 45 second miles. I was like taking bathroom breaks, wiping poop off my feet. Like, you know, I wasn't like struggling to run. I was just taking care of myself, you know, in the end. But that was kind of funny to me, but okay. Highlights include the crowd. Amazing. One little girl gave me a popsicle, like a Freezy Pop. And that was like life. That gave me life. I ate that for about a mile. I was so happy. I fist pumped Christy Turlington.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I didn't realize it was like, she was at the Newton Fire Station with this big Hulk hand, like fist bump.
Oh,
fist.
Yeah.
And I looked at her, I was like, oh my God, it's Christy Turlington. She had a big Every Mother Counts, like sign next to her. So I knew it was her.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to go back and take a selfie with her, but I was like, yeah, you got to keep going forward. You're about to hit Heartbreak Hill. So just keep moving forward. I saw Karen Smyers. She's a triathlete, a multi-time world championship triathlete who I admire and I've met. And she was on the sidelines. I saw her. I saw Matt Wilpers, who's one of my favorite Peloton instructors. So like it's a couple of celebrity sightings, which is really cool. And also just like the men and women who were part of the Quarter Century Club. So they started early. I guess that means they've done more than 25 Boston marathons. And wow. Some of them were out there. Like one man clearly had maybe like a stroke where he was just favoring one side of his body. And they were giving it everything they had to get to that finish line. And it was just so inspiring. Oh my gosh. Like the Achilles runners, you know, we did that podcast with the Achilles runners, the people out there who were on prosthetics. I mean, I just soaked it all up. Yeah. I was just like, so many people. The cool thing about running in a race this big is like, we're all going for the same goal. We're all trying to get to that finish line. And some of us feel great and some of us feel bad, but we all have our own challenges. And like, here we are collectively trying to get to the finish line. And that just really motivated me to like, not like cancel out all negative thoughts and just focus on everything around me that was really amazing and positive and uplifting. And I really, awesome. Really channeled all of that positivity. And I was just super happy. A little annoyed my race photos. I thought I'd be smiling more. I guess I didn't see the camera, but still, Sarah, like, why do you look so pissed off? But like, some of them are really good. Some of them I'm like, oh, I look tired. I look like I'm struggling there. But so all in all. Well,
we congratulate you, man. I mean, you've been running around, truthfully, and to have a day like you did and to finish and finish injury-free, finish with a smile mm-hmm. on your face, have your family there. I mean, that is awesome.
Yeah.
We are super proud of you and look for it. I mean, you get to go back and do it again. Now you know exactly what to expect.
Yes.
If you want to turn it up, mm-hmm. you can. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you don't have to.
Yeah. And I'm motivated too. Like I'm not going to, I don't consider this, I consider it such a great experience. I just wanted to be transparent that like, yeah, like everybody wants to go a little faster. And
oh,
like,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And, yeah. But that's not going to stop me from, you know, continuing this quest and whatever the quest is, you know, I just am now bitten by the marathon bug. And so I definitely will try again and execute it a little bit differently next time.
We're here for it. We're here for it. So good luck. And thanks, Sarah, for sharing that.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Our third guest is Karen Ryan, who is fresh off her 10th Boston Marathon. Amazing. And the first one that she actually did as a charity runner. Karen is the mother of 5 and lives in Maryland. So Karen, tell us about your 10th road to Boston. It was unlike your previous 9, yes?
Yes. Well, I qualified. However, I did not have that big of a buffer. When I finished my race back in August, it was after I came back from meniscus knee surgery. And when I had the opportunity to apply for the Boston Marathon this time, and then after hearing all the news about how there was a large number of applicants this year, I knew that my chances were probably pretty slim because I only had like a minute and 7 seconds to buffer this year. Okay. So I started to look for different options where I could be a charity runner.
Okay.
However, though, I knew that for my 10th Boston, I really wanted to do something that would give back to this race that has given me a lot of great memories and experiences. So I had already known I was going to do some sort of fundraiser. I just didn't know how that was going to play into it yet.
Sure. Well, and so I'm just curious. So you had a 107. What was that? What ended up? What did you need to have to get to qualify for this year?
I don't remember the exact. I think it was over 5 minutes.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah, okay. It was a large one this year. So.
Okay. Nice. And so you already had a charity and idea in mind, which is so cool. Is it
right
hard to find a charity to run for in Boston? I feel like it is, but maybe I'm making that up. Like, tell us about how you found that.
I think there are a lot of charities. However, a lot of those charities don't have a lot of bibs to give out.
Okay.
So knowing that I was, you know, planning on doing a fundraiser, and when I had heard the news that there was a huge number of applicants and my chances were probably pretty slim of getting it, I started that process a little earlier before I found out whether or not I got in.
Oh, okay.
So I've been working with a coach this last couple times, and she's also a friend of mine, and she had also coached someone who had been a part of the Heather Abbott Foundation, who is who I ended up running for. And so this someone she had coached had been a part of that organization for several years. So she said, well, you know, check them out. And I was familiar with Heather Abbott's story because I'd heard her on a podcast or two. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I reached out and I had to do an application, and then they interviewed me. And then after, I don't know, a week or two, they, you know, kind of came back and said, okay, you've been selected for the team. So.
Oh, very cool. Well, so people, for anybody who's not familiar with Heather Abbott, you want to tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah. Heather was one of the victims of the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. She was spectating that day. And as a result of her injuries, she ended up losing her leg below the knee. And she has kind of changed or taken her that trauma experience and turned it into something beautiful, as she has now created a foundation that gives prosthesis to those who have lost limbs through traumatic circumstances.
Very.
So they can move however they feel like they want to move.
That's great. And you raised a nice chunk of change. I mean, I was just on your page. It's almost $14,000.
Yes. Yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah.
So like I was saying, when I was looking, you know, they said, well, we'll just see. They kind of said when I was selected, like, well, we'll see, you know, you might be a qualified runner, and therefore you can just raise the lower amount, if you need a bib, then you have to raise a much more substantial amount to run the race. So obviously I had to raise the more substantial amount, which was great. It was a good experience for me. It pushed me out of my comfort zone, which
my husband says that's
a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How did you do it? Was it mostly social media or in person or both?
Yeah, pretty much all social media. I mean, you know, occasionally if I'd see people, I'd mention it, but I'd always just post on social media. I had one friend who helped me do a Super Bowl squares fundraiser, or like, you know, to sell those. And that was a huge help. Like my friend Stacy's really good at like getting people to sign up for those. But it was very fun to see how some of my other teammates on this Heather Abbott Foundation team raised money. I followed some of them on social media, and they did all sorts of interesting things, from eating contests, big sales, you know, raffles, raffling off different items. And some of them also did Super Bowl squares. So it was interesting. And like my husband said, it's good for me, pushes me out of my comfort zone, because, you know, asking people for money is not like in the forefront of something I like to do. So
yeah, it's a skill set, and I don't have it either. It's not easy. It's not easy for sure. Well, so you said you have teammates on the Heather Abbott Foundation. I mean, so did you guys have contact during the training, or did you just meet up in Boston, or talk about kind of how, if that was a connection or more just you guys all were, you know, joined by the cause and wearing the jersey on race day?
Yeah. So we had several Zoom meetings where we kind of met one another and met the team and met a few people from the board that were instrumental to kind of organizing everything behind the scenes. So you kind of got a feel for people and met them that way. There were 10 charity bib runners and 4 qualified runners that raised money. So I believe that's correct. I think there were 14 of us all together that raised money this year for the Heather Abbott Foundation. So yeah, between Zoom and emails, kind of got to know each other a little better. And then on race weekend, they organized a team brunch where we got to know a little bit more about the foundation. They brought in a couple of beneficiaries of prosthesis that they were able to give. And so those people got up and shared their story, which was, you know, really wonderful. You know, kind of see where this money is going to go to. And it made it, you know, just even more so meaningful.
Yeah, makes it real for sure. Well, so is there a difference between being a charity runner and a qualified runner, like where you start at Boston? I don't want to say how you're treated because I imagine I know that they treat all their runners really well, but I mean, was there a difference in perspective?
Yeah, I think a little bit. You know, I had originally thought, okay, this will be new. I'll be starting in the last wave with the charity runners. However, when they finally told me, okay, you can go ahead and register, the few of us that had actually qualified for Boston but had not made that buffer, there were a few of us, we ended up being still seated with the other waves. Like, so I really was in a wave that I normally have been in all these other years.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, okay, well, that's all right. But so that part was a little bit the same. However, like, you know, it was different in a way that one of the members from the board came and met us and before the race, before we had to board the buses and got a team picture. And so that was fun, like just to kind of see, you know, those other faces and to be able to, you know, at least have that meetup the morning of.
Okay. But if you are, if you don't have that qualifying time like you did, would they be starting in, I don't know how the waves go. Is it like wave 4 or 5 or something like that?
It's wave 4, yes. And so there was, you know, a good group that started back there. And I kind of was jealous because I'm like, oh, they looked like they had a lot more fun. I mean, I just like, I had fun, but I mean, they all started together, which sounded kind of really cool. So if you didn't have a qualifying time, you would start in that last wave.
Last wave. Okay. So this being your 10th time through, I mean, is there a part of the Boston course that you particularly look forward to or one that you particularly dread, or is it just a year by year thing or kind of, I mean, you're obviously know it pretty well, I imagine.
Yeah. By this point, I have a pretty good idea. I never remember the entire thing, but the hardest part is probably around mile 16, where you start kind of hitting that first hill that goes up over this overpass. And when it's sunny out, like it was this year, it was quite hot. I knew, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to let this beat me this time. It's just going to keep moving forward. And I actually saw a couple friends in that area, which was a huge boost. And then, you know, once you get through the hills, I mean, once you get in the hills, there's usually a lot of spectators. Whereas like the first 10 miles of the race, you have spectators, but there are pockets where it's much quieter, you know, before you hit the towns that you're going through. And then once you hit, you know, after you get through those hills, you're pretty much, it's, you know, nonstop cheering and people, spectators, you know, so you can try and draw a lot of energy from the crowds.
Yeah. Do you ever, like this year or other years, have you ever been like, I remember because you've pretty much done it every year since 2015, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So first of all, that's congratulations on being so consistent. I mean, that is very impressive. But is there a point where you're like, I remember in 2017 when I was really struggling or I felt better in whatever, or does it all kind of run together?
No, I remember most years. I mean, like I said, it was a very hot this year, especially for those of us who are not used to the heat yet. Yeah. And there have been years when I've gone up and they've been hot years, like 2016, 2017. They were I was like, okay, I'm trained. I don't care if it's hot. I'm going to go for it anyway. And then I got to like, one year it was like mile 12. Another year it was like maybe mile 15. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I was crashing and burning. And the rest of it was a struggle. So since then I have really just learned to, you know what, this is a celebration of all the hard work I did in the rest of the year. You know, just enjoy it. Take it all in, experience it. Don't worry about, you know, trying to hit a certain time. So that's kind of the way I've kind of gone into it the last several years, because, you know, it's kind of like a celebration of all the training you did for the rest of the time to try to work hard to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So is 10, do you have another 5 in you? Like, or tell us, I mean, even 10 even sounds really good. I mean, do you want to run it more times, or are you done, or?
No, 10 is it. That was my kind of goal, to get to 10. And so that's why, like, I really wanted to raise money this year, was, you know, to kind of like give something back.
Yeah.
And I've done it a lot and I've enjoyed it. I've had, you know, so many great memories with many people from my running club who come up every year and run it or spectate, you know, families, the years my family has been there. You know, I've had great memories, but I think it's time to let it go and just try to do new things. You know, there's other races in the spring that I want to experience, and, you know, I want to travel to new places and run new races.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so for anyone's, we've talked to you, who has had the best depth of experience at Boston. We talked to Sarah earlier, who just ran her first Boston. And then we talked to Bree, who ran it as the elite runner. Everybody had a great day there. I mean, can you kind of sell Boston? I mean, someone's like on the fence, like, well, I don't know if I'm going to qualify, you know, so should I go for a charity? Like, is it something that you feel like, you know, it's great to have on a running resume, which I realize is a really dumb question, but kind of, I mean, if someone's like, I don't know if I should do it, sell it, Karen, why should I do it?
Well, I would number one say, you know, qualifying for Boston does not make you any more of a runner than anyone else. You know, that, you know, we're all runners, you know, this is something we enjoy doing. So most of us are not elite runners, so we can just enjoy it. However, I mean, if it's something you really want to do, sure. I mean, I think it's a great experience. The crowds are great along Boston, and there's so much, I guess, hype around it. And I think for the most part, like it's lived up to the hype, you know, and doing those last few miles through Boston and making those couple turns and going down Boylston, you know, there's nothing quite like it. That is amazing. And so even if you decide to do a charity and run it that way, I think, you know, you'd get a lot out of it. And I think the teams there seem to be very, supportive of one another. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just really great to see, you know, everyone finish, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, congratulations. Congratulations on basically a Boston career. In 10 years, that is an impressive career. So, and on raising all that money for the important Heather Abbott Foundation. So do you have, and you just finished, before we started recording, you just finished doing the World Majors. I mean, you have a lot of bucket lists, like big crossed off. I mean, so what spring races do you want to do, or what's next?
I am not sure. I'm kind of putting my feelers out there. I think next year I may try to do Big Sur, because that was always right up against Boston. So that made it kind of challenging to try, and I never attempted to do the back-to-back thing.
Sure.
So I still kind of have a loose goal of doing 50 states, but I have a long way to go. So I may try to check off some in the next year, you know, all more states off that list.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Karen. Congratulations. And we appreciate you bringing your story here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
If you happen to be listening to this during the week of April 22nd to the 28th, we are in the middle of our Train Like a Mother Club sale week, when all of our programs are 20% off. So whether your goal is a comeback 5K or a Boston qualifying marathon, maybe you're a little fired up for that, this is the week to grab your program that will get you there.
We'll link to the sale in the show notes, but giddy up. Our sale ends on Sunday, April 28th. Our program today was produced by Barry Medor of Fire on the Bluff in St. Paul, Minnesota.